And our last headline takes us to the ballot box, sort of. The current presidential election season got off to an early start, a really early start. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg has already thrown a wrench in the works. Yesterday, the registered Republican announced he was leaving his party. Bloomberg insists he has no plans of running for president as an independent, but stranger things have happened. To help us make sense of this and other stories, we've called in Ron Christie, vice president of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and former special assistant to President George W. Bush. We've also got Mary Frances Berry, a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. Welcome.
Hello, Farai.
Hi, Farai.
So what about this? I mean, this is like a, you know, it's enormous. And you have Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California, them joking about a dual ticket. I mean, obviously, Schwarzenegger can't run for president, at least not under the current rules. But Ron, what do you make of this?
Well, I think it's a remarkable development. I think that you have Michael Bloomberg all but winking and smiling at the camera and saying, I'm not running, but I'm really running for president. He has said that he intends to serve out the remaining 926 days as being mayor of the city of New York. But at the same time, he's also said that he's willing to spend up to $500 million, perhaps even $1 billion of his own money making a race. I think if he decides to ultimately throw his hat into the ring, he will have a similar effect to what Ross Perot did back in 1992, where he forces the Republicans and the Democrats to concede either some of the issues that Mayor Bloomberg might find important, or he'll elevate some issues that he might find important. Remember, Ross Perot took nearly 17% of the vote. I think he's getting into it. Bloomberg, he'll be the one to watch in the next couple of weeks.
Mary, he's saying that he's not going to run, but people have said things in politics and then changed their minds.
Right. I think this is very exciting. And Perot actually got 19%, I think, even though he didn't get any electoral votes. And so Bloomberg has enough money to do anything he feels like doing and to get in as late as he wants to and to watch and influence people by being out and always teasing people about being in. If he were to run, you know, some people are always looking for the great next hope. You know, this time, the Mr. Clean hope. There are people in New York City who support him. A lot of people in the African-American community. It could throw a monkey wrench not only into the Hillary Clinton prospects there, but Barack Obama, too, and Edwards and the rest of them. Al Sharpton, Brother Al, said that he might consider even supporting him. So I think this is exciting news. We will have to wait to see. It's more the people who are not in right now are in some ways more interesting, the ones who are thinking about getting in, than the ones who are already in.
One thing that really fascinates me about this is also how it reflects the demographics of the country. You have a situation where among young people, especially, there's a growth of independent or unaffiliated voters. And even among the population at large, you have pretty much a third of voters who consider themselves independent, third party, unaffiliated, that mix. And yet there's not really a groundswell of credible mainstream candidates who fit into that umbrella. Do you think this changes the game? Mary first.
Well, I think that, first of all, a lot of those young people who describe themselves as independents don't vote. Older people, by and large, are much more likely to actually, when the deal goes down, actually show up and vote. So politicians have to take that into account. But I think that the prospect is always there that they will vote, and therefore they have influence. And all the candidates now have to be scrambling to figure out how do we take into account. They got enough things to take into account already, early primaries, the money race, the internet, and how does that play out. And now they've got this new factor coming into it with Thompson out there getting in and being ahead without getting in. This is just amazing.
And I agree with the professor. I mean, I think it adds an additional dynamic that so much of the media attention has focused on the horse race between Senator Clinton and Senator Obama on one side and, you know, the big three and the Republican former governor, Mitt Romney, Mayor Giuliani, and then, of course, Senator McCain. And now this is the big unknown factor. How will this potentially impact those candidates? It will certainly divert the media's attention in the next several weeks, looking at what a Bloomberg presidency or candidacy might look like. So I think in the short term, I think it's going to change the dynamics of the way that the 2008 race is being covered, and that might also have some policy implications further down the road.
Ron, stay with me on a different topic. Rhode Island is part of a growing number of states considering yanking registration from voters with mental issues like Alzheimer's and dementia. Where should folks draw the line on this?
This is really tough for me. I was reading the article earlier today, and I thought, you know, it is a privilege and an obligation to vote in the United States, one that I think that if you're given that privilege, you ought to exercise that and to participate under your responsibilities as a good citizen. I am very troubled at where you would draw the line of where one individual's mental disability would preempt them from being able to exercise that vote. Who's the arbiter? Who's the judge? What sort of recourse do people have? Certainly, I think that people who go into the voting booth ought to exercise their vote wisely and soundly, but I'm just nervous when the government might be an arbiter to determine what that judgment or how sound of a judgment that might be.
I think it ought to be determined by medical experts. If someone is determined by experts with a right to appeal their judgment to be mentally incompetent and unable to make a decision, then I think government would have to accept that, and rules that accepted that and excluded them from voting might make some sense. And there is a lot of opportunity for unfairness in that, so you've got to have some right to appeal. But clearly, these are not decisions to be made by government. They can only be made by experts.
And let me just, Farai, if I might, to pick up on the professor's point, even those who are found mentally incompetent in the law are still able to stand trial. So I agree with the professor. I think it's a really difficult decision that has to be made. And even if you do have a medical individual, perhaps someone could say, well, if I'm deemed mentally incompetent but I can stand trial, why can't I vote? Mm-hmm. It's a tough dilemma.
I just want to move on to yet another topic, which is early primaries. You had the situation where Florida recently voted to leapfrog ahead in the primaries up to the last week in January. More states followed suit. Both parties could have a presumptive nominee as early as February 5th. Senator John McCain is like, no way. It hurts voters and candidates. Ron, how do you fall on that?
I actually agree with Senator McCain. If the way that the current landscape is right now, by February 12th, nearly 60% of the population of the United States will have either voted in a primary or a caucus. I think it's so early. There's been this rush to have the candidates come out and announce their candidacies early. Now the states are trying to move up to be more relevant early. I would like to see a system where people have the opportunity and the ability to hear the candidates, hear their fleshed-out positions. Moving it up to early February, I think, does a great disservice. It's just too soon, and only a handful of the major states, I think, will be relevant actors and players here.
Hasn't it always been a little bit like that, though, Mary? I mean, this is an extreme case, but there's a lot of states that kind of pull up the rump of the primary season, and nobody really cares what they think.
Well, that's been the case, and that's why these states are changing the date for their primaries. And I agree that it's probably not a good idea in policy terms and trying to figure out who ought to be the candidate, but there's nothing we can do about it. It's one of those things you can spend all day lamenting, but this time out for 2008, that's the name of the game, and everybody has to live with it. So what that means is there's an even greater burden being put on the media to make sure they find out everything about everybody and put it out there as soon as possible, and on the public to pay attention earlier than they would have paid attention before, and to start trying to sort out what's happening. There's a great risk that nominees will be picked, and then after they're picked, there will be all kinds of information that nobody ever thought about before coming out, and then people will have to make new judgments, and there's no process for do that. So it could end up being a train wreck, work out okay.
One example of that is that during the first George W. Bush election, there was a drunk driving issue that came out. Newspaper editor in New Hampshire said, no, we're not going to run this story, and it only came out after the primary. Ron, do you think that was a disservice to voters?
I don't think so. I think, obviously, with the Bush presidency, or the Bush candidacy, I should say, back in 2000, the voters still had ample opportunity to look at the president's record, some of the social issues, some of the transgressions that he had participated in as a younger man, and they decided to elect the man into office. But again, going back to Mary's point, I think that people around the country are going to have to pay a lot more attention a lot earlier in the process. Rather than waiting until, say, the spring of next year, it's incumbent upon the voters, it's incumbent upon those who want to set the next direction of this country's course to pay attention a lot sooner and to try to get as much information about those candidates, because it's just not going to be available. And by the end of February, we'll have the Republican and the Democratic nominees more than likely.
And Ron, Mary, we don't have time. Ron and Mary.
Okay.
Next time, more for
next
you.
Time.
All right.
Ron Christie is vice president of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and former special assistant to President George W. Bush. Mary Frances Berry is a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania.